Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby.
Hello and welcome to Movies vs. Capitalism, an anti-capitalist movie podcast. I am Frank.
And I'm Rivka. And Frank, today is a special day. It's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. It is my birthday today, along with us talking about the Academy Awards. So this is really, you know, these are like two of my favorite things, all packed into one magical day. That's actually not true. I was just saying right before we started recording, I was like, I hate my birthday. I hate it. I hate the attention. I don't want people to show their love for me.
But we did get to celebrate last night.
We did.
Not on. Yeah. And so that was good. I think it's good that even if you're uncomfortable with it, it's like good to let your friends gather and celebrate you. And it was such a lovely night and we all had such a great time.
Yeah, we had a great dinner, just like a solid Italian meal, family style. You know, Angelica was like, what do you want to do for your birthday? I was like, friends and food. That's all.
Friends and it was lovely. Although today, so yesterday was the 10th, which as you can all guess, that means we didn't watch the Academy Awards live because we chose Friends and Food instead.
But we both got up bright and early this morning to watch did you watch the full Oscar replay? I watched the entire thing. Did you just watch the important clips?
I couldn't freaking find it. So I had to watch clips.
It was on
clips
the ABC app.
Capitalism. I had to get some work in, so I couldn't really dedicate the entire. I did watch clips, and I think that's like all I could probably fully handle.
It was fine. It was the Oscars. Very much felt like an Oscar ceremony. A lot of pomp and circumstance. A lot of self-seriousness. A lot of jokes that fell flat. A lot of people ignoring geopolitical crises around the world. But overall, fine. I thought.
It's what was to be expected. I thought what was a lot more exciting were the things happening outside and around the Oscars. And we wanted to start actually by talking about that before we talked about the actual show itself, because there were a lot of organized pro-Palestinian protests and acts of resistance that I thought were really interesting surrounding this 96th Academy Award, which took place at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood, Los Angeles. And so one of them was an organized protest that hundreds showed up to calling for immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And this action was organized by a few different groups: Film Workers for Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace in Los Angeles, Adela Justice Project, and SAG-AFTRA Members for Ceasefire. They all met at the Cinerama Dome and marched through Hollywood. And their message, as they shared in an Instagram post, was clear that we will not be distracted by the entertainment industry. We will continue to call for a permanent ceasefire and Palestinian liberation. It got some mainstream coverage. They shut down, if anyone's familiar with Hollywood in this area, they shut down the cross street of Highland and Fountain.
That is like the center of Los Angeles, the worst place in Los Angeles. It's where every single major road and freeway converge, and it's like where all of the old-timey Hollywood stuff is. It's a terrible place that you would never go to unless you were, I guess, attending the Academy Awards.
Yeah, although isn't there like, there's like some, I feel like when I lived there, you don't go there, but you end up there, you know? Like, because like you're saying, it is like, if you want to shut things down, you go and you shut it down. So great organized effort, because they did cause things to slow down. There's videos of some protesters even physically blocking people from entering the awards, which is a really great image of these protesters with signs. And the Academy sent golf carts to retrieve some of the stars who got stuck. And of course, the LAPD had to come out and make a presence and in full force, and they eventually cleared them out. I think a few people were arrested. But one thing I thought was, I was trying to see if anyone mentioned anything. And while entering the red carpet, Mark Ruffalo did shout out, and I think we have a clip.
The Palestinian protest shut down the Oscars tonight.
Gaza.
Humanity wins.
So in this clip, Mark Ruffalo is shouting out with his fist in the air as a sign of solidarity. We're late. The Palestinian protest shut down the Oscars tonight. Humanity wins. So that was a nice act of solidarity. There's always opportunity to go farther, but it wasn't active. It wasn't like someone saying, like, pretending it wasn't happening, or, oh, I can't believe my party was ruined.
So I'd read somewhere online that this protest actually like made the Oscars late. Is that correct? Like they made the show start maybe a few minutes late, or they disrupted things enough that they actually threw off the production and telecast of the Oscars. Is that right?
Right. Hence Mark Ruffalo saying, yeah, we're late.
Got it. Well, I want to talk about this real fast before we get on to the other stuff. The reaction that you'll see to protests like this, especially protests at large public events, especially ones that, you know, don't necessarily have anything to do with politics, like a sports event or something like the Oscars. When we see protests at places like this, the criticism that we'll often hear is, you know, this isn't the time or the place for these protests. Like, what are you trying to accomplish, you know, protesting the Oscars? It's just a bunch of actors and famous people. Like, what are you trying to get done? The rebuttal to that argument would be, well, that's the point. The point is to disrupt. The point is to draw attention. But yeah, I'm curious, how do you feel about something, specifically this protest at the Oscars and its effectiveness?
I mean, I think I'm constantly thinking, you know, I think it's a big question for everyone in this state when we're battling this genocide, doing anything we can to make any kind of difference. And it feels so hard and hopeless, but I don't think that hopelessness can stop us from any action. It's like we have to take every action possible. And like, of course, we're going to disrupt this moment of supreme, what is even the word? Like
entitlement, complacency,
or just example of an empire moving along as if nothing's happening. You know, we know sure. How much it's like in these moments, they want us to think it's just art. But we know how complicit the media, that this is media under capitalism. We know the role that it plays. We know the messaging. You can't on one hand, like, believe there's a power in what this awards show does, that it's such a big moment for capital and for the empire. So of course we have to disrupt. Of course there has to be moments of disruption. And I think what I was most interested in that I'm learning more about is like really trying to point out the moments of organized action. Maybe that's just like learning more from other Marxists and just other organized, that like this is not individuals. While each individual artist up there, obviously the award winners, and we'll get into any kind of acts of disruption that did or did not happen during the actual award ceremony, but that I love this action because this was hundreds of protesters who were out there together, and it was intentional. And I do think even though it's only 5 minutes late, like to be able to even shut down traffic, like that was important, and it did make news and it did make headlines, and anything we could put like small actions that will build. It's just like how many different places can you chip at the wall in an organized fashion? That this wasn't just a spontaneous act. This was different groups, which we listed them, working together. I feel today like these little actions all matter when they come together from a collective organized place.
And I should be clear, like I only asked that question just to like get the conversation going. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I completely like,
you're
I think,
like, why can't they just stop?
I'm going to surprise everyone and think that those protesters at the Oscars weren't doing anything. No, I completely agree. I think disrupting the halls of power, and in this case, like the halls of power of Hollywood, you know, making people feel uncomfortable, making people face the reality of what is just such brutality and barbarism that the U.S. is still supporting and complicit in. I totally agree. So I, you know, like my hat is off to all those protesters, to anyone who's been involved in these, you know, sort of direct actions. I think that's a good point you made about like organized actions. And this is a conversation I was having with a friend of the show, James of Comrade Workwear, was, you know, like the utility in protest versus direct action, and, you know, just how the more intentional you can be, the more effect and in like what you want to achieve in your outcome is, you know, ends up being a more effective strategy than just like, let's just stand out here, you know? So I think we're saying kind of the same thing. But let's move on to the other actions, because there's something in New York City as well, right?
Yeah, I really like this one. This was from an autonomous group of film workers and watchers who came together to tell the Academy, essentially, that silence is violence by projecting this message onto Columbus Circle. So if you know Columbus Circle, there's the big building where like the Whole Foods is, and it's kind of like the mall. And then across is the Mandarin. Yeah, I think it's the Mandarin Hotel.
Okay.
Fancy hotel. And there was a big watch party there for who was being attended by some of the Academy members and viewers, but like fancy watch party. And so in their direct view, they could see across through the big windows what was being projected. And so, and anyone who was around too, but this was essentially aimed at making sure that people could see it, but these viewers
that penthouse
could see it.
Could see it.
This class of people could see it. And I thought the message was not only like a beautiful artistic projection, the message itself was really powerful. The projection read, and it's worth looking this up. You can find this on Film Workers for Palestine, has this on their Instagram, so you can see the visual. But the projection read, "While we watch the Oscars, Israel's genocide in Gaza continues. While we watch the Oscars, how many will be killed? While we watch the Oscars, how many will be orphaned? While we watch the Oscars, how many are starving?" And then they actually have video of inside the people. It did disrupt the party. So then there's a video on their page as well of people looking out. So I think it's also the fact that there were multiple actions happening. And again, this is this idea of just like all the little things and that's an organized action, right? Of artists, because I don't know how they got that. It's a big projection that certainly they organized to get up and get projected, and someone did the art for. These are organized acts of artists making a choice to disrupt this event, which I think all those acts together accumulate so that when you have the next action, which I think was probably got the most press because it was the celebrities, but you probably saw a lot of celebrities, not a lot, actually several, not enough.
Yeah, very, only a smattering.
A smattering, a handful, if you will. Attending the Oscars on Sunday wore the Artist for Ceasefire pins, which we've seen artists wear at the Grammys, at the SAG Awards.
And this is the organization, the open letter that has been signed by a number of creatives in Hollywood that is, you know, the artists. Originally, it was for an artist for a ceasefire. Now it's artists for a permanent ceasefire. But that's sort of like the most high profile pro-Palestinian organization. It's not even an organization. Again, it's just an open letter, really, that is front facing in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's a great point. The difference between doing organizing and being a group of artists and advocates coming together. I mean, I would guess that the extent of the organizing is getting out these pins and, you know, there is
press
room
releases
for critique
and
here that we could get into. But I think I think seeing this come all together, this would be less meaningful if there hadn't been the protests in all that we just the actions that we just listed that are deeply organized and really disruptive. But when these all come together, I think they're valuable. And so especially when you're like, this was far fewer artists than you would hope who wore the pin. So it was Ava DuVernay, who's a director, Mahershala Ali, Riz Ahmed, Mark Ruffalo, Rami Youssef, Daniel Scheinert, who's one of the Daniels who won for Everything All Everywhere All at Once, Billie Eilish and Phineas Eilish. Is Phineas's last name
No, he's Phineas O'Connell. I don't know why I know that. I know that because I just watched the Oscars.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And now I'll know that forever.
There were also some stars who were seen wearing buttons with the Palestinian flag, including Anatomy of a Fall stars Milo Machado Granier and Swan Arlaud. So, yeah, I think there's valuable critique, and we've seen critique that, like, this is the bare minimum to a certain extent.
Sure.
It was
basic acknowledgement.
Basic acknowledgement. But then, contrastingly, and I don't know if we're at this place anymore, where we were a few months ago with a place where it felt like, and none of these stars are in real danger of their careers being taken away from them. I mean, I think that's the other thing, is like the proximity of power. But certainly, you know, it's disruptive to a certain extent, because there are certainly, I think, people there who just aren't even comfortable with that present. Although maybe that's less now. They're at the same event with like a Chelsea Handler.
Sure.
I don't know if she was at the Oscars, but she's at the Vanity Fair party. You know, they're at like, they're there with some serious
Zionists. Yeah. You know what? I hadn't even thought about that until you said, like, I'm very curious what the, you know, off screen dynamic is between, you know, all of these people. Like, is it something that they're talking about? Is it something that people are, you know, specifically trying to avoid talking about? I'd be a fascinated fly on the wall to hear some of those conversations.
And if you're going to wear the pin, speaking to why. So,
yes.
I didn't hear the only person who I heard who had the opportunity in his interviews or that we saw was Rami Youssef. vocalizing something beyond just wearing it.
Tell us about the pin.
Yes, this is for Artists for Ceasefire. We have a growing list of so many artists who are calling for a permanent and immediate ceasefire in Gaza, calling for justice and safety for the Palestinian people. And it's something that I think, even if you want to get really universal about it, we just need to stop killing kids. And we're using our voices to speak to people's hearts, because the news is a lot of talking heads. Maybe people think they're confused. We want to stop killing kids, and we want to make sure that people can have safety and lasting justice. And so it's really inspiring that so many artists here have been down for the cause and are wearing these pins.
You know, at the DGA, I talked to Mark Ruffalo, your co-star, and he was wearing an Artist for Ceasefire pin, and I wrote about what he said, and I got so many emails telling me I needed to correct my story. It's astounding the amount of division out there. What kind of pushback or difficulty have you experienced when you're trying to talk to people about this?
Again, I think that it's something that obviously people have a lot of feelings about, and I think that there can be a time and a place to process feelings. The best way to process feelings is when there isn't active violence happening, and so we need to stop the violence, we need to stop the bombing. I'm an American citizen, so I can talk to President Joe Biden, and President Joe Biden, in his State of the Union, said that we need a ceasefire, said that we need a Palestinian state. Those are his words, and I echo them, and I think that those are the ways that we can then get to processing a lot of feelings and get into solutions, right? Because people want solutions for lasting justice. They want to be seen. They want to be heard. And again, all the feelings you're talking about, all these conflicted things, best way to process them, best way to talk about them is when bombs aren't falling from the sky, killing women, killing children, killing men, killing innocent people.
And so I'll say, I know we're going to get into the awards and the winners, but it was pretty, because they won, Phineas and Billy, this pin is going to be publicized, and there's a lot of articles about it, and it gave it more visibility. But they didn't say anything in their speech, which makes it even more strange. To me, that's like,
yeah,
there's so many contradictions. People have pointed out the contradiction of Billie Eilish wearing Chanel and wearing this pin. And just, but I'm also like, they're young artists with a lot of power, and they didn't wear those to the Grammys, and they did wear them now. Like, I'm also open to humans and artists learning and growing, and maybe that's part of like the what comes with also like being more understanding that this is like the value of organized protest and it taking away like the individual and what they're doing, like being like, maybe they can learn, because I have a feeling organization got them there too. Maybe they taught, what is this, you know, even though it's not, there's a level of organizing getting everyone out those pins.
No. I think it's the same thing we've talked about, which is, you know, celebrity, not celebrity worship, but the whatever the term is for like expecting idealized behavior from the celebrities in your life. So I hear you. It's like, I'm glad that they wore the pins. Would have been nice if they had said something. But then at the same time, it's like, what am I expecting from Billie Eilish? Like, why am I putting this pressure on Billie Eilish to be the, you know, to be the person to stand up in the face of all of this and actually say something? It would be great, but like you're saying, it's very individual based. It's very celebrity culture based, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, I'm also not like surprised by Billie Eilish and Phineas. Like, they're young. And something we know about what is happening in Gaza right now, this ongoing genocide, is that people under the age of 35, like, overwhelmingly do not support what Israel is doing and the US's support of Israel. So not like super shocking to see them wearing those pins. Although, you know, and we'll get to this a little bit later when we talk about Jonathan Glazer, the director of Zone of Interest, and his acceptance speech. But fuck it, let's just talk about Jonathan Glazer now, since it's part and parcel of this conversation. Because he was the only artist last night who said anything about what has been happening in Gaza.
Thank you to the Academy for this honor, and to our partners A24 Film for Access and the Polish Film Institute, to the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum for their trust and guidance, to my producers, actors, collaborators. All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say, look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
I thought like a very tactful, heartfelt, empathetic statement that took into consideration the, you know, the violence of October 7th and then all of the ongoing violence that has been perpetrated since then. But something I noticed in his speech is that he was fucking shaking. Like his hand was...
Yeah, he was reading.
As he was reading, he was shaking. And good work to him for saying something, for being the only artist who actually said something that night, and, you know, for facing that, that what is very clear, a very visible, tangible fear to stand up in front of all of these people, the most powerful people in your industry, and be the lone voice of, not dissent, but like the lone voice calling out what has been happening and
naming it
and not letting people ignore it.
And being a winner, British, whose movie The Zone of Interest is about the Holocaust.
Yes.
And that, of course, is a... I mean, really pisses Zionists off when it's a Jewish person who, and I think this film was even like made with the museum for like a Jewish Holocaust museum. But you know,
yes,
like
it was,
that really
it was produced in conjunction with the Museum of Auschwitz or the Auschwitz Museum. Yeah,
you know, obviously Zionists are not representative of Jews, but it is a, you know, that really pisses them off because he's speaking out against exactly like the sentiment that my Jewishness won't be used and won't be hijacked by this occupation. And he calls it an occupation. And of course, one of the most weaponized has been this idea that our ancestry, we dealt with the Holocaust. And so I think it's just the fact that it's blowing, it's targeting that lie is, yeah, scary, like pretty brave. Obviously nothing compared to the men, women, and children being confronting what they're confronting in Gaza, but we don't have to, I don't think there has to be that comparison to say it's fucking, it is brave. And was it Jonathan or was it Jonathan's producer who spoke out at the BAFTAs?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Feel like we mentioned this before, but maybe not, but they had spoken out at the BAFTAs previously. And I think Democracy Now! Did some reporting on this and they got, you know, there's real threats that come with this. Like he's absolutely getting death threats as a result of this.
Oh yeah. I was just casually on Twitter this morning and the people absolutely coming for Jonathan Glazer on Twitter, it was just absolutely ruthless. Yeah. And but everyone decontextualized his words. Everyone like literally cut his sentence off and misquoted him and saying that he was refuting his Jewishness, not that he was refuting his Jewishness being hijacked by this occupation. It was really, it's like really vile attacks against him. So, yeah. So it comes with actual backlash of some kind. Do you have any final thoughts on these acts of resistance that we saw, these acts of protest? We've kind of like touched on it. Wish that there was more, but at the same time, like don't look to Hollywood to be our fucking saviors because they're not going to be it.
Yeah, not looking to Hollywood. I think there is something interesting. There was a creator on Instagram. I think I sent it to you. Hold on. Who? Hart Erica on Instagram, who I follow, who I really love their perspective, had a post that said neoliberalism loves a pin with an image of Billie Eilish wearing Artist for Ceasefire pin on the red carpet. And then a quote saying, getting so exhausted with radical movements being targeted, silenced, and also pilfered from so liberals can wear pins, create infographics and content that makes their audience comfortable. And I think that's a really important criticism to take in. And there's definitely a lot of contradictions as we see these organizations try and move forward. But it's true. There's always like, regardless of how much courage it takes to even be in that position to wear that pin, there's people getting arrested, putting their bodies on the line in the movement. So yeah. to even get Billy and Phineas and all of these celebrities to a point where they're like, okay, I'll take this act. I'll wear this pin.
It's something that I grapple with constantly, personally, which is like, I'm all the time thinking to myself, like, you are not doing enough. Do more, do more, do more. We've been to protests. I've been making the calls. I've donated to relief funds. I've gone to a few direct actions. I'm trying, but at the same time, I'm always like, just do more, do more. There's so many people doing so much more. I just wanted to bring that up because it's something we're kind of talking about now in terms of these celebrities, but I think it's also something that any of us who care about this movement and stopping this genocide probably are thinking about individually. So I'm curious, do you ever encounter these thoughts? How do you work through those thoughts of like, how much am I doing? Should I be doing more? And, you know, like any feelings of guilt that come along with that?
Of course. Yeah. I think part of it is just that contradiction of being the individual in a capitalist system, the individual in any kind of oppressive system is to me the, like my spirituality has become more and more grounded in anything bigger than myself, which is the purpose of organizing and the purpose of an organization. And while it can feel very confusing to find your way in, that's sort of where I'm seeking is like, what is the right place? And that in when you're in the bigger organism, then it's like actually doing the small thing is enough. But having it connected, and that's why the organizers are really important. And it's why I think it's important for us to point it out when it's like these actions. And maybe, again, that's the point that this creator was making of like why it's important to say this is not spontaneously people wearing pins. Maybe they're being used, like handed those pins, but that was on the back of lots of people organizing, refining messages, refining this. And yes, are they really making a really radical statement about Palestinian liberation? No, it's not as far as you can go. No, it's not radical. But I do think there is some validity to like, we can't even talk until like the, right now, stop the violence, stop the genocide today. So I guess that's a roundabout way of saying like, I'm in my journey looking for like ways to not let my ego get in the way when, you know, to process the grief and the guilt. I think I've shared with everyone that like grieving and donating my time to grief groups has like been an important part of my practice. But even those are like organized groups that sometimes I'm involved with, you know, that I'm just like, and there's like lots of people coming together and looking for some place to be connected to an organization. And yeah, but of course it's sad and horrifying, and it tells us so much about the human existence as well. And like,
absolutely. And I knew that there was no like easy answer. I knew that you aren't going to be like, just do these three things and you'll feel fine about it. I just, you know, I love talking about this stuff with you. So I was just curious what, you know, your experience has been through all of this. All right. Well, so now we've talked about all of the actual important stuff that had to do with the Oscars. Should we have just like now just talk about like the fucking Oscars, baby? Like, some awards.
Yeah,
some
it is interesting how meaningless it does become after that conversation, which was, I think, the point and why we wanted to frame it that way. But let's do it.
I had originally said to Rivka, like, we should just talk about the fun stuff first. And Rivka was like, that's literally the opposite of why this podcast exists. And I was like, you know what? Great point. Yeah, so let's start with, I guess, Jimmy Kimmel and his monologue. You know, did you watch the entirety of the monologue?
I did get to watch the monologue.
I thought it was fine. Solid, like, B, you know,
lots
B minus.
Lots of dad jokes. Yeah. Playing it safe.
Lots of dad jokes. Some corny ass humor coming out of Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, I guess that's to be expected for, you know, just like a...
He did one that I thought was funny.
Which one?
The one where he's like Cillian Murphy when he's doing a drama. Cillian Murphy when he's doing a comedy.
Wow, got you with that silly Ann pun. Wow, incredible. Yeah, I thought he was fine. He did in his monologue mention the fucking strikes, the Writers Guild strike, the actors strike,
he did throw a little shade at the directors.
I did love that. Actually, that was my favorite joke of the night when he was like, the writers, you held strong, the actors, you held strong, the directors, well, you guys actually folded pretty fast. That was good. But I thought he did like a decent enough job of pointing to the importance of organized labor, reminding the audience that Hollywood is at its heart an industry town, which is like something that he said, and how important the concessions that were won and the victories against AI and everything. And then he also mentioned the solidarity and the vital nature of the crew unions during the strike and, you know, their acts of solidarity, being able to carry the actors and writers through. And then he brought a bunch of, you know, union crew members up on stage to thank them and said, you know, like, when you guys are ready to negotiate, we'll be there for you. Yeah, what did you think about this? Did this read at all hollow to you, or did you think this was like a nice, sincere moment and an important nod to the importance of labor and the importance of withholding labor?
I think it can be both. Like, I think it's that and
sure.
And like, yeah, and like your host of the Academy Awards is making, like, you know, this isn't like a rogue, I'm going to say something that wasn't planned and like orchestrated and approved for a message.
Sure.
So I'm always skeptical of that. You know, I was like, okay.
Yes. No, all of this made it through several rounds of notes and, you know, the network took a look at it and everything. It's, you know, as like innocuous of a pro-labor statement as possible. But I was
I was glad to see it and hear about union power, but it also felt a little bit like, now that you're back in line and like we want to remind you, you won big on the AI. And I was just, you know, there's a voice in the back of my head that's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, most of the people here are probably like have invested in like ways for AI to fuck the majority of these filmmakers. Like, let's be real. So it just felt a little, I don't know. It's hard to, Jimmy Kimmel, it's hard to not be like a little suspicious. But I did like hearing, you know, I think it's both. I'm trying to open this space for like the contradiction. Almost everything that happens inside the Oscars is a giant contradiction because of the context.
That should be the title of this episode, is just a giant contradiction.
So moving on to more contradictions.
So then they did Best Supporting Actress and Divine Joy Randolph won. I felt, you know, warm and fuzzy about that. I was like, great.
Always.
Good for her. Hell yeah. The Holdovers, yeah. Very good movie. Very fun, sweet, pleasant movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, shit. It's
fun. I gotta be honest. I saw that, the preview, and I was like, oh, absolutely not. And then it was getting all this buzz,
why?
And I'm like, I guess it's, I'll tell you why. Because from the preview to me, it looked like I just, Holden Caulfield, like, boy discovers himself in school with daddy headmaster. Like, that was like the vibe I got just from the preview. I'm not saying there was, I don't know anything about it. I was like, not interested. No, thank you. I remember being like, I do not want to read Catcher in the Rye. I think I like protested. I was like, I don't want to fucking read Catcher in the Rye. I had a miserable time reading that in school.
Got it. So you're just like anti-sad intellectual boys. You just like, you don't want to hear a brainy boy be sad.
Yeah, it wasn't. And then I was just like, I just wasn't here for it, the whole aesthetic. But apparently it's pretty good, so.
It's a very good Alexander Payne movie. I really like all of his movies. And it's, you know, it feels a little even more, honestly feels like warmer and more heartfelt than most of his other movies, which I think can be pretty like, pretty biting.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just like a pleasant watch. And Divine Joy Randolph is very, very good in it. And I believe Dominic Sessa, the boy, is a recent CMU grad from our alma mater.
Well, we love that.
We love that. Good for you, Dominic.
Dominic. Come on the pod.
Come on the pod. Then they did the screenplay awards for original and adapted. So these went to Anatomy of a Fall for original and American Fiction for adapted. Justine Triet and Cord Jefferson accepted respectively. I really liked Cord Jefferson's speech a lot.
I did too.
He took the opportunity to just speak out, speak out isn't the right phrase, just to mention how, you know, risk-averse Hollywood development has become, and basically made an entreaty to the executive and development class of Hollywood to, like, take risks on young, up-and-coming, diverse filmmakers rather than just, like, doing all of the safe bullshit IP shit that they've been doing for the last 5 years. So I thought that was good.
Specifically, I think he said, you know, instead of making like $100 million movies, make a bunch of $10 million movies. Like, spread the wealth around. Did you see American Fiction yet?
I have not seen it yet. I do really want to see it.
I really enjoyed it. I have. But I will say, so I did binge one. I was like, how many of these movies can I get in that I haven't seen before we talk about the awards? I did get to watch Anatomy of a Fall. Did you?
No, I haven't.
Loved it. One of my favorite movies that I saw this year. And I loved seeing their husband-wife team, I believe. They talked about writing this script while also having kids. So anyone who mentions like just being a family and working, that kind of working artist, I thought was important. But the film is really good. And Sandra Hüller, who was there, who they cut to a lot, which I loved. She's amazing in Anatomy of a Fall. Although the dog, Snoop, played by, what was the dog's name?
I keep hearing about this fucking dog. Everyone,
this dog is one of the best.
Everyone's like, I've heard this so many times on different on podcasts, on like interviews, on like red carpet. Everyone's being like, this dog gave one of the best performances of the year. I'm like, what the, what did this dog do in this movie?
You will see when you, and not even, not even the dog's like, dramatic turn, which I guess they kind of mentioned in the speech is a little bit of a spoiler. I think, I feel like Jimmy Kimmel mentioned it. Spoiling the movie. This dog, everything you need to know about screen acting.
Wow. Move over, Sir Laurence Olivier.
But, oh, I was saying Sandra Hüller was in both Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest, which you saw Zone of Interest, and I have not yet seen Zone of Interest.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, she's turned in performances in French, English, and German this year. She's pretty phenomenal. She's amazing in the Zone of Interest. Both of them are, her and the lead actor. Yeah, Zone of Interest, God, just a profoundly upsetting and impactful film. For anyone who hasn't seen it or doesn't know what it's about, this is not really spoiling it. It's basically takes place during World War II, and it's about the German family, the commandant of Auschwitz, the concentration camp, the commandant who's running it, and his, you know, lovely countryside estate that his family has been living in since the construction of Auschwitz, right next door to it. So it's, you don't see anything inside of Auschwitz. It's just the stuff from their property, and it's just, it's about, like, as Jonathan Glazer said, the way that we dehumanize each other, the way that just this unspeakable violence becomes so completely normalized. It's a pretty breathtaking movie. But yeah, so Sandra Hüller, she's absolutely unbelievable. So really cool to see. It's probably cool to see her all over the place, and, you know, excited to see what happens next in her career. All right, next they did the creative craft awards, like makeup, production design, and costumes, which I think all went to Poor Things. Poor Things did pretty well with all like the creative awards, which I thought was well deserved.
Yeah.
I think there's probably going to be a bunch of Barbie stands out there who are upset about that Barbie didn't win a thing. Barbie did not win a, actually that's not true. Billie Eilish won for best original song, but
I guess this is worth talking about. What did you make of them? I just felt like there was so much like acknowledging that, like even in the monologue, right? He's just acknowledging that everybody wished Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig were not nominated. There was just so much like pointing to it, and so much like Rita Moreno gave a speech about America Ferrera's monologue, which I really did appreciate. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, that was nice.
I really loved that moment. But there was so much pointing to like trying to make up for the fact that it wasn't.
Or that the two of them were not nominated. The movie was nominated for Best Picture, but specifically Greta for Best Director and Margot for Lead Actress.
Yeah. It was just a lot of like, okay, we're, you know, we got to point this out. And then there was another, who was it who made the speech about like, oh, I guess it was also in the monologue, Jimmy Kimmel talking about his wife not getting the, wanting to buy Barbie dolls. And then this movie bringing back the Barbie doll. There was like this, I was like, that's it. Like, oh, right. I think if anything, the stuff about Barbie was an important reminder that this is all about marketing, that Barbenheimer was the biggest marketing moment.
No, but I'm glad you brought up that Jimmy Kimmel line in the monologue. I forgot to mention it, but you're right. That was the point of Barbie. And Kimmel, I think in the joke, he says, you know, a year ago, you couldn't pay my wife like $1 million to get our daughter a Barbie doll. Like, everyone hated Barbie. And now my daughter loves Barbie. Everyone loves Barbie now. And that was the point. That was the point of Barbie, was to launder the image of Barbie, to make her more palatable for a younger generation, to you know, clean up all of the destructive stuff that Barbie has done historically to women over the course of decades. Even though Jimmy Kimmel meant it in a complimentary way, it felt kind of like a felt kind of like saying the quiet part
showing
out loud a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah,
showing the cards, mask off, of just like, wow, your movie really made it so that people don't hate this plastic doll product anymore. Good for you guys. But yeah, but you're right. Everyone was very much bending over backwards to be like, we're so sorry that the two of you didn't get nominated. We're so, so, so sorry.
They still seem to be having fun. And like, it was kind of the thing of like, it doesn't even fucking matter. Like, the movie still won the marketing awards.
It made the most money last year. Even... Like, Greta and Margot both had points on that movie. Those two made so much fucking money. They like probably made like tens of millions of dollars. Yeah. Off of this, like, each of them off of the success of Barbie. So like, it's like, what else, like, what do we need, like, what else do we need to give them? They won the capitalism. They must have these fake awards as well. I don't know. I find it all infuriating. All right. Next was supporting actor, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer. Yay. Great. Whatever. We all know it's going to happen. He gave a nice speech. It was fine.
I did love, well, when I see him, the thing I loved that he did, like, you all know how I feel about Oppenheimer, but I loved this documentary he did with his father. And every time I see him, I think of his father, because his father was this awesome kind of, like, radical, independent filmmaker. And then it's interesting to see him standing there in, like, the most Hollywoodized.
Yeah, he's fucking Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, so blah, blah, blah. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, we can go through the rest of these pretty quickly. They did the documentaries. 30 Days in Mariupol won. I just wanted to mention this briefly. So, yeah, 30 Days in Mariupol, which is a documentary about, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And then also before the In Memoriam, they showed a clip of Alexander Navalny, the subject of, I think, last year's documentary feature, who is Putin's political adversary, who has recently died in Russian prison. So I just wanted to touch on these briefly because I think this was an example of the wars and the imperialism that Hollywood is comfortable with, which is to say supporting Ukraine, you know, unilaterally, unequivocally over the last few years, over the course of Russia's invasion. Yeah, it's just a really sharp contrast to see the Academy mm-hmm. give space and time to talk about this conflict and specifically and not have any sort of dedicated space in their broadcast to talk about what's happening in Gaza. I mean, it's something that people have pointed out over and over and over again through the course of these conflicts, which is, you know, why do we support Ukraine, but we do not support, you know, the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank?
Yeah.
All right. So then the last four, the last big ones, best actor, best director, best actress, best picture. Yeah. Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, wasn't surprising.
Cillian.
Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, again, was not surprising. I thought they were both very gracious. I thought they seemed like very, you know, very sincere in their thanks. But then I think the biggest surprise of the night, Emma Stone upset Lily Gladstone. So Emma Stone won her second Oscar for Poor Things, a movie that we loved. We talked about it on one of our Patreon episodes. But she beat out Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, which I think everybody thought was the lock. And, you know, honestly, like, if Lily had won, I also would have been thrilled to see her win. You know, she doesn't have an Oscar. First time nominee. Her performance was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what did you think about Emma's surprise second win?
I mean, I loved that performance. If I'm thinking about, like, the point, like, but it's so silly, but I love them all. So, like, when you kind of are, like, when if I'm buying into, like, these are given to, like, performances that are great and you deserved it, like, it's so silly. Would it have been more important to hear Lily Gladstone? Yeah.
Yes.
Did I love hearing Emma Stone? I loved hearing what she said. I teared up a bit her talking about being a mom. I think that's important. But, I mean, she, I think, genuinely looked, like, super unprepared and surprised to get it.
I think so.
It would have been much better platform for Lily Gladstone to speak. I would have been curious what she would take the opportunity to share.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And especially knowing, I hope Lily Gladstone has an A-list career after this. I think she's fucking wonderful. I would love to see her all over the place. But, you know, we know how Hollywood works, especially the way that Hollywood treats women. So I don't know if she'll have another shot. I don't know if we'll see her at the Oscars again. So that's the only...
I don't know what
bummer.
You mean by A-list career, but, like, I hope we don't see her go on to do a bunch of Marvel movies. I hope she continues to... But she's been working. She's, like, a real working actor who has been who's been making a living in this craft, doing it, like doing the thing. I actually did cringe a bit at, like, Jimmy Kimmel was like talking at her about that story that is kind of been used a lot about how she was about to quit acting, and then Marty called, and like, there's something I have to just say, like, yeah, we love stories like that in this industry because it's super American dream, and it feels like, you know what, it could happen out of anywhere. Just keep struggling, and like, maybe you don't have health insurance, but you could get it at any point if Marty calls with an opportunity. It just felt very, like, that just kept making me cringe. Like, I liked the story when I first heard it, but it felt like very, like, and Lily, this is her first time here, and she was going to quit, and then this white guy called her, and, like...
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I was just like, and she didn't seem to enjoy that either. I was like, there's so many other things you could say, and it's not even funny. It was just very, like, white dad at a kindergarten party saying bad cringe jokes. That's... and I didn't like it. It's because she's been working, and he framed it like kind of like she hadn't made it in her career until this, and you're like, actually, I bet she's fucking worked on so many more things than a lot of those people in that room. She's older than Emma Stone. She's probably been working a lot longer as an actor than Emma Stone. And yet, because she's new to this, like, Hollywood, to the Academy Awards, she's being infantilized a little bit.
That is that's a really fucking good way of putting it. Thank you. And I let me clarify, when I say A-list career, I don't mean, like, I hope Lily Gladstone becomes the next Captain America. I don't want that fucking at all. I just mean, like, so I should pick better, more specific language, I guess. Just like, I want her to have a full and wonderful career. And I want to see her more. I want her to have more opportunities. I want her to make cool choices. I want her to make amazing art. That's all that I meant. Yeah, I definitely don't want Lily Gladstone playing the next fucking Dr. Doolittle or some bullshit.
No, that'll be Timothy Chalamet.
That's true. We can absolutely count on Timmy to churn out some IP bullshit. Although Dune 2 fucking ruled.
And he's given some of, I think he's like a fucking unbelievable actor, I will say.
Same, yeah. And you know what? I haven't watched it yet, but I hear Wonka is not bad. Some people have actually suggested that we cover it on this podcast because I guess there's some,
I think we should,
anti-capitalist messaging in there. We can get there. I'd like to cover the original Willy Wonka first. But all right. So lastly, Best Picture, Oppenheimer. I mean, we don't need to get into it. We've made our opinions about Oppenheimer clear on this podcast. Although I think I have come around to being slightly more, not sympathetic, but I think I like the movie a little bit more than you do.
And I gotta be honest, like, I think Cillian Murphy's a really good actor. I can't remember. Do you remember scenes from that? Like, I don't remember anything other than a vibe. I remember, like, fire and vibe.
Well, I've watched it twice.
I couldn't fucking tell you oh, Jesus.
I wanted to watch it again. Sometimes I watch movies a second time. Sorry, Rivka. I host a movie podcast.
I do too, but okay.
No, I think he is. I think he is very good in it, and I do remember like moments of his performance that I thought were pretty, pretty powerful. But, so that was it. That was the 96th Academy Awards live from the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. Thank you all so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, we just want to remind you all to subscribe to our new Patreon account. Because we don't sell ads on this show, and we rely on community support to keep the show going, and you can do that by joining our Patreon.
So that's just for $5 a month or more if you're able and really are enjoying this. It goes. If you really love us, it really does help us out. If you donate to our Patreon, you get access to new bonus episodes. So remember, we mentioned that Poor Things is a bonus episode, and other things that Oppenheimer, I think, was one. So you'll get all the back catalog of all those bonus episodes and directly support the show if you join. You can also join our Patreon for free. That helps as well. And you could leave us a one-time tip or multiple-time tips in our tip jar. You can find all of that info in the episode description in your podcast player, or just go to mvcpod.com.
Also, make sure to subscribe to this show on your podcast player. Leave a rating and review. It helps boost the algorithm and gets the show in front of more people. And it is, in fact, very helpful. Also, want to remind our audience that we donate our ad space to progressive or leftist organizations that are looking for aligned spaces to promote the work they're doing. So if you are part of an advocacy organization, a mutual aid group, a worker co-op, some other org, we would love to promote your work here on this show. If you're interested, you can email us at moviesversuscapitalism@gmail.com. That's moviesvscapitalism@gmail.com.
So for this week, we want to mention a few ways that you can take action. We know the genocide happening in Gaza right now is at the forefront of everyone's mind, so we wanted to share a few resources.
You can go to ceasefiretoday.com, which has a list of actions you can participate in, from protests to email campaigns to places you can donate for humanitarian relief.
Or you can download the Five Calls app, which is an easy way to call your representatives to demand a permanent ceasefire and an end to Israel's occupation of Palestine. Again, that's ceasefiretoday.com or the Five Calls app on your smartphone.
And we'll be sure to include links to those resources in the episode description in your podcast player. And again, thank you all so much for listening. For next week's movie, we will be watching the 2021 Nicolas Cage film Pig. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
So go to the